Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Startup with Monique Leray, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Monique Leray. This is The Startup. And how are you doing this Sunday, this Easter Sunday? I guess Passover as well for some of you. Thanks for tuning in. It's kind of a gloomy, rainy day out here in LA, in Southern California area. I have a really great guest today, but I wanted to just, you know, check in with all my listeners. And next week we're going to be Zooming. So, you know, stick by for that. We won't just be doing call-ins. I'll actually have my at-home podcast studio set up, and you'll be able to see me and my guests, like the rest of the world, using Zoom. So that'll be exciting. And how are you guys doing this Sunday? Hopefully you are being productive in your business and you are staying motivated. Today I have the pleasure of having a musical icon in music world and production world. I have Mr. Kimo Hulani on the line from Blueprint Production, Audio Blueprint. Kimo, how you doing today?
You know, I'm doing all right. I'm just hanging in here with this the whole quarantine at home thing.
Oh my goodness, it is. It's definitely, we're at the hang in there portion of this program, it seems like. How many days have you been in sheltering in place, do you think, now?
Let's see, since about the 17th, 18th of March, so a month.
Yeah, we're at that. It seems like that's the right amount of time. I know different cities and different counties are, you know, going in at different times, but it seems to be around about a month. St. Patrick's Day sounds about right. Well,
yeah,
and you're in the music business, so
hello, I've lost you.
There's a and your background.
Oh, okay, hold on.
Yeah, because we would love to hear, you know, about, yeah, so go ahead and tell us about your background and who you are and what you do.
I'm just a guy who had a love for music most of his life, and I got fortunate to just be able to do what I love. You know, it wasn't like I had a plan going in. You know, unfortunately, like back when I came into this industry, none of these avenues existed. There was no in social media. There was no way to really reach these people or even find out who they were. It was like a few publications. You had Billboard, and that was like the Bible. And so you used billboards. You saw who was doing what and who was moving. They had a section called the executive turntable. So I would always look at that because basically these people don't go anywhere out of the industry. They might change companies, but they're there. They're still in the industry. And so you might not get them, say, for hypothetically, you might not get them on the phone when they're at Sony, but you might get them on the phone when they move to Motown.
right.
And believe it or not, even though this is a social media world and you can kind of reach out to people all over through social media and kind of DM them, leave them a message or whatever, and hope they get back to you. I think that there's some of the elements from back in the day that are still true. And that's get to know who their team is. You know, and know who they, because if you don't know who their team is, you're not going to get to them. They're still insulated. But a lot of times, if you get to know somebody on their team and you're just honest with them, hey, this is who I am, this is what I do, and don't force anything. Just kind of wait for your opportunity, because the opportunity will always present itself. It will. It just, you have to be patient.
Well, I love that. I love that advice. And it sounds like you were being a little humble in the beginning and saying you're just a regular guy, which is true. You know, we all start somewhere. But tell everybody, you know, how old you were and where you were, what part of the country you were from when you got into music. And when you speak about reaching out to the executives, can you be more specific on your journey?
Yes. Okay. When I got into music, I had, well, it's kind of a strange story. I had two loves in life, and that was flying airplanes and music. And
oh, wow.
I was fortunate enough to do both. And I actually had a pilot's license before I had a driver's license.
Wow. That's insane. I love that.
It was different. I mean, don't get me wrong. I got them both the same day, but my priority was at 7 a.m. to be at the airport to do my FAA exam. And after I did my FAA exam and my solo flight and everything in front of the FAA inspectors, and they signed off on my license, later that afternoon I went to DMV and got my driver's license.
So how old were you? You were 18 years old or 19?
No, I was 16.
Okay, great. 16, yes. It's really young.
16. Yes. So, you know, I was pretty driven for what I wanted to do. And I tried to stay focused on those two things. And originally, I wanted to be a drummer. I just really wanted to be, play drums. And we had a piano at the house. So part of the trade-off with my mother was, I'll get you your drums, but you're going to learn to play this piano. And I hated the piano. I wanted to be the drummer and all this stuff. But she actually did me a favor. I did learn to play the drums, but I gravitated more towards the piano, the melodic instrument, because that became the catalyst for me to write, to really express myself. There's only so much expression you can express on a drum kit, unless you really, don't get me wrong, there are some drummers out there that are amazing. I am not one of them. I can play well. I can hold my own, but it's not where I focused my energy. I did focus it more on piano, on melodic instruments. So that became more of, even though I hated the trade-off, I, in the end, I thanked my mother for that, you know?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
she actually sent me on a direction I would not have went. But
sounds like she had the foresight. Yeah.
Well, you know, she always thought, I mean, their thought was always, I don't know why you're wasting so much energy on music. It was a typical thing, and it's associated with their era. They came up, you know, in an era where get a job, have benefits, do your, you know, and have a career. They didn't see music as a career. It was more of a hobby that you're trying to force into a career, because let's face it, the success ratio back in that time, it is like, you know, a million to one, literally, because there was there weren't outlets like now. So I spent a lot of time playing in bands, in different bands. And, you know, as a young person, I mean, I think my first band, I was like 14 years old. And so I was in this band. We played at different events and dances and stuff like that at different schools and had a great time. And then we just kind of evolved. I started playing with these guys. I was down in San Diego at the time. And I started playing with these guys out of L.A. And so I would, you know, I would come up to L.A. and go to rehearsals. And we do shows. And we did the shows at, you know, the typical places in L.A. We did the Troubadour. We did the main places. But it was still okay. The band was doing good. We felt we were good. We had what it took, but we didn't really have what it, as a group, we had what it took as musicians. We didn't have what it took as a frontline group, so to speak. I mean, you have to think at that time, our competition were groups like Confunction and Cameo, and we were good. We weren't there. We were
What was the name of your group back then?
We had it revolved. We were Flavor at one point. We were Universal Language at one point, and Universal Language was the one that kind of stuck for a long time. And and we did a lot of fun because we looked at Universal Language. Music is that universal language. It transcends every person on this planet. Everyone has music. So
yes,
we did our thing, but we were just not that. We weren't that group. We couldn't compete with, I mean, you have to think, we were kids. We were 17, 18 years old. And people like, and not saying it wasn't possible, but where we were at that time, where the music industry was, they were into Cameo Can Function. We were doing something a little different. We were kind of like along the lines of Prince versus Michael Jackson versus Cameo Can Function, kind of a hybrid of all of those things, because we were influenced by what we listened to.
Sure.
And what came out of that was no one knew what to do with us. But
You're a hybrid band, baby.
So no one knew what to do with this. So we did take some meetings. We had fun with it, but we learned a lot. And that's where I actually learned the value of actually getting to know the people under the people that you want to meet. Because subsequently out of that, I ended up going to college. And in college, I went to work as an intern at Capitol Records.
Wow. And that's huge.
And it was fun because I went from intern, then they had a shakeup, and then I ended up actually getting the job. And although I felt like I knew what I was doing, as soon as I got the job, I realized I didn't know anything. So I became a sponge. I actually did. I became a sponge. I started listening to the veterans that were there. Anybody who had been there longer than I had, I was listening to them, be them a year or 10 years. It didn't matter. I listened to them all and I absorbed everything. And there wasn't any set pattern in which to follow. It was a collective of other people's successes and failures that I paid attention to. So it actually showed me on one end what not to do. There were steps that of things you just don't do. And then there were things that you do. And then in between, there were things that this person may have failed at it, but it wasn't because it wasn't a good thing to do. It was because maybe they just didn't see it through, or maybe they just didn't have the right approach. And I would approach some of those things and actually have successes with them. And, you know, and we're not talking huge things, minor things, just how to get to an artist, how to get to people. Because at the other end, back then, it was the other way around. Artists were looking for us, but we were looking for them too.
Because
then labels actually developed artists. Now they don't develop nobody. they want you to come. When you come to the table now, you have got to have everything in order. It's, what have you done? What's your fan base? Have you sold anything? What are you selling? What's your merch looks like? What do your visuals look like? What does your fan base look like? Who's your team? They want to, basically everything that the labels used to do. Now they
like
want
that.
You to have.
It sounds like you have to be your own A&R person, it sounds like, as you know, as well as the talent.
Exactly. Or at least have a team that can be objective. And that's the hardest thing right now that you have to convey. And I did get kind of sidetracked here. I kind of went from where I was to here, but they're intertwined because where I was then and what I went through, the same hurdles exist, except for now you have more accessibility. But I kind of look at it two ways. One, there's accessibility, and you can see these people, see a page in their life and what they're doing, at least as much as they're showing you in social media. And you at least know who they are. And they're easier to contact in an indirect way, because you can DM as many people as you want on social media, and they can never see it because they might have an assistant running their social media. Or they just don't feel compelled to contact you back. But don't get discouraged. You know, you can't get discouraged. What you have to do is you have to find out what is important to them about music. And you have to hit them with that. Because they don't care how good you think you are. They have to think you're good. And you have to bring something to the table that they see value in. Not the other way around. Really, they don't care about your style.
That's a really good point, Kimo. And I'm glad that you brought that up. So for all of our listeners, that point could be applied to every area and every business. Find what who you're reaching out to values. Find what they want. Find out what the need is and be that. And I've heard that from other entrepreneurs, but that's great. Good point.
Yes. I mean, you have to find, if you're in business selling, let's just say hair products, but if you're selling a broad spectrum of hair products, then you can pretty much put yourself wherever there's people, because people buy hair products. But if you're selling a specialized hair product that applies to one sector of the market, then you better be in their area, because they're not going to come to find you.
Yeah.
They want you to be convenient for them. And no matter what the product or service is, you have to make yourself accessible to them with something that they see value in. If they don't see the value, you're done. I mean, in coming up in the music industry, there's a lot of competition. I would go to auditions to perform on tours and things like that. And you know, there'd be cats there that could play circles around me. I'm just being honest. They could solo all over the place. They could do all these things. But what I realized the artists wanted wasn't all that. What they wanted was someone who could play in the pocket and be there when the part requires it. Not be so busy trying to show what I can do, but show the fact that you know your lane. My lane is to support this artist and be in the pocket for that artist.
And
that's what actually kept me around, is that I'm not the best keyboard player, best pianist. No, I'm good at what I do. And more importantly, I'm good at making other people shine, because my job as a producer isn't to take the shine from the artist. It's like I'm the support system for the artist. And
you know,
when I go ahead.
Can you, and on that note, why don't you highlight some work that you've done as a producer? Because I know that the listeners would love to hear some things that maybe we weren't familiar with, or that we might be familiar with that you've done.
You know, I have done a lot of different things, and I've had a lot of fun doing them. I've gotten the pleasure of playing with, one of the first great things that I got to do was play with Stevie Wonder. And that was just by accident, actually. He came to San Diego, he was playing at this college, and he was doing a talk and talking to these people, and he started playing, piano. My oldest sister, she's involved in a lot of these things, and she was one of the people that organized this event with Stevie Wonder, because like Stevie, she's legally blind as well. So that's something that she had built a relationship with him with. And he came and he was like, well, who likes playing piano? And my sister kind of volunteered and said, well, my brother plays. And mind you, I was nervous as heck, because I knew his music, but I had never played his music. So for me, it was like, I was just nervous. And I was just like, and I just told him when I walked up on the stage with him and told him, I said, and there were two pianos there. And I told him, I said, well, I don't know your music, but if you play, I can follow you. He goes, sounds good. And he started playing, and I started following him. And that was one of the, that really set me off on a different path than I was even thinking, because it took me out of this idea that I needed a band, because Stevie Wonder didn't have a band. It was Stevie Wonder, but I didn't want to be a singer. That's not what I wanted. I just wanted to write and produce music. And So that led to a whole lot of other things, because once I got his nod, he was like, you know what? You keep doing what you're doing, you're going to be great. I never thought of myself at that point as being great. I just thought of myself as being okay. But after he said that, I thought of myself, I must be good, at least good. And
so that's a hell of a compliment from an icon. So I, you know, you might well listen to him. It's wonderful.
It was. And so I said, wow, okay. And at that point, I took on a whole different idea. I just kind of woodshed it. I went back and I started rethinking everything I wanted to do. I got rid of the idea of a band, even though I needed access to musicians, because back then you had to have musicians in order to just record your ideas most of the time. I mean, this was the beginning of the technology boom. So I went out and started buying this technology, the drum machines, the synthesizers, and everything else. But I still like live musicians. So I started doing hybrid things. And one of the first things that I got to really do that, you know, that was one of the first things with Stevie Wonder. But after that, I got to meet a whole lot of people. I started getting invited to, because of my association with major labels, I started getting invited to all these different conferences and stuff. So I met a lot of people. And I met them before they were anyone. And then I met them afterwards and they remembered me. And that was good. I mean, on that note, one of the people I met more recent years that everyone would know is Bruno Mars.
Wow. And
I met him before, you know, he was always Bruno. And don't get me wrong, even before everybody else knew him, he was still Bruno. He was still a wonderful, great person. A great musician, but I met him at a friend of mine. She's an actress, Tiffany Hines, birthday party. And she introduced me to him and said, hey, you got to listen to this guy. He's good. So I did. I listened to his music. And I think he kind of got mad at me because when I listened to it, I told him, I said, man, you are awesome, but you sound so much like Michael Jackson that this sounds like music Michael Jackson should be doing. And I think as soon as you find you, you're going to be great and no one will be able to stop you. And I think he kind of got mad at me. He didn't show any anger or anything like that. He was a very gracious person, but I think it was kind of like not what he wanted to hear, or maybe it's because he had heard it before. I don't know which. Never got the chance to ask him about it later, but it was really never a topic of conversation. It was just more like, he found his sound and he became who we know now. And he's a great, and from what I knew of him, he's a great person, very humble, very giving person from everything that I saw. It was wonderful to see him make that transformation from being this guy at a birthday party, letting me hear a CD, to the next time I heard him, he was on the B.O.B. Record, I Want to Be a Billionaire.
Yeah, you know, so, he's got that work ethic. And I remember hearing about his story, and he's got the grit that it takes to be successful. That's for sure.
Yes. And so, you know, I've got to do a lot of cool things. I mean, I did a remix of a Maroon 5 record. I've got to work with some of the Wu-Tang Killer Bees groups, one in particular, The Watchmen. I did a couple singles with them out of Florida, and it was awesome working with them. And just, their work ethic was just the same. It was like, we're going to be successful no matter what. So yes. I got to meet a lot of people along this journey. But the last maybe 10 years of this journey, I've kind of dedicated myself to trying to help the up and coming artists. But where the big void is right now, there's a positive and a negative to me that has come out of the accessibility of technology and equipment. Right now, everyone thinks they're a producer, but they don't really know what a producer does. they're beat makers, they're composers, but they're not really producers, because as a producer, your job is to unite the lyric, the performance, and the music. And that's everything from picking the right sounds in the music to picking the right lyric to go with that sound and getting the right performance out of that artist. As a producer, your job is to challenge everyone involved to be the best they can be and to bring something out of that artist that they may not even know is within them.
Wow. Yes.
So,
and go ahead, Kimo, because I want you to really highlight, you know, how to bring that together, if you could.
Well, yeah, I mean, it starts off, anything I do, I start with a conversation. And okay. I am very realistic with people. It's like, I can write you the greatest song. We can write it together. We can bring in songwriters to write the greatest song. And at the end of the day, it comes down to, is it received by the public? Because there's no guarantee that you're going to be successful or famous or any of that. Our job is to provide the best song possible. Then there's other avenues and elements that come into play. How's it marketed? Who's your team? Who's promoting you? Who's building you as a brand, as an artist? And if you don't have that solid team behind you, you can have the best record on the planet and no one will ever know it exists.
Yes. Yes. It's, you know, a lot often people say, I don't like to sell. I don't know how to sell. I don't know how to market, but you've got to figure that out or find someone that can help you, because production, marketing, and sales, you know, you have to be in sales in any brand, yeah. Any business, especially this though, it's visible, you know, visibility.
Yes,
for sure.
Yes, and you have to think that right now, the way the industry is, it's a digital world. We're selling a very nebulous product. You can't even touch it. It's a digital download on your computer or your phone, and that's what it is. It's not like back in the days when you actually took a trip to the record store, pulled out an album, looked at it, saw the liner notes, and there are people who are still into the liner notes, who did what, and they want to touch something. And there's a market for a physical product, but majority of what's going on now are digital downloads. So you're selling air basically to them. You're selling your talent, your air, and your energies, but you're selling them something they can't touch. So in order to be successful as an artist these days, you have to touch them in other ways, and that's social media. They have to be able to connect to you somehow. You have to say something with your music, and you have to say something to them that they can relate to outside of the music. Just as a person, you have to be relatable. They have to like you. They have to want to see more about you and hear more from you. And if you don't do that, which is sales 101, you have to give them an old saying that I heard in college was, you sell the sizzle, not the steak. If you give them the steak, you have nothing else to sell. But you sell them the sizzle, and you sell them who you are. You let them be a part of your brand. If a fan comes out of takes the time to write you a DM, take the time to write them back. If you do nothing else but acknowledge the fact that you saw it, and a simple, just something as simple as liking their comment
will makes their whole the day.
That's yeah.
Right.
It means that you've actually taken the time to look at this and say, wow, this is great. Now, my business partner and producing partner, Jerry King, when we met, I was living in New York, and we met at the Apollo Theater. She was actually doing Showtime at the Apollo. And that particular night, Brian McKnight was there. And I was there, and I was just kind of hanging out with her vocal coach, who him and I actually shared a building. Our studios were in the same space. So I met her through him, that night at the Apollo at the rehearsal because he had another group that he was working with that he was trying to get them on Showtime at the Apollo, and they eventually did get there. But this particular night that she was there, I heard her sing, and I didn't know her from Adam. And I told her, I said, you know what? I have the perfect song for you. And she was, and like most artists at that time and most artists now, she was skeptical, like, who are you and why are you bothering me? But she knew that I knew, you know, I knew her vocal coach. So she said, okay, you must be an okay guy. And then I knew Maxine from the Apollo, and I knew some people there. I knew other people. So she was like, oh, okay, so he must be a decent guy. And I said, matter of fact, my studio is in the same building with your vocal coach. So next time you're in the building doing your vocal lessons, just knock on the door. I'll let you hear the song. I'll sing it to you. And if you like it, great. We'll record it. If you don't, no big deal. So the next time she came, I let her hear the song. And I sang it to her, and she's like, wow, that's beautiful. And, you know, she was, I wasn't sure what to expect, but it's beautiful. So I said, well, let's just record it and see what we do. So we did. And then we ended up recording an EP worth of material, and I released it. And I released it at a time when independent releases was not the big thing. You still had to get associated with a major label for distribution. So, okay. So I did. And I actually got my distribution deal at 30,000 feet on an airplane coming back from a meeting. It's like we flew out from New York to LA. We took some meetings there and we took the meetings, and it was kind of like, all right, it was kind of like, yeah, we like it. Let's hear some more. Let's do this and that. And it was kind of good, but frustrating because I didn't get what I wanted. But we get on the plane going home that night, and I'm sitting next to a gentleman who notices, you know, I get up to altitude. I pull out my billboard and I'm reading through it. And he goes, hey, you're into music? I said, yeah. And I said, you know, and so we're talking, we're just having a casual conversation for about the first hour. And then he says, well, what are you working on? I said, you know, I'm working with my artist, because she wasn't my business partner. She was an artist at that time. And I said, I'm working with this artist, Jerry King. You know, she's from New York, and we're working with her. You know, she's had some radio success on WBLS and a few other stations. We've done a couple things out in a couple showcases and so on and so forth. And in New York, and he goes, wait, I've heard the name. Now, and I was like, oh, okay. So we're talking and talking. And he says, so what did you go to LA for? I said, well, I took some meetings at a couple of labels, and I'm trying to get a distribution deal because I believe that this should go, but markets I think it's going to go in, since the U.S. market didn't really have an R&B market at that time anymore. It was pretty much converted to hip hop. And I said, I need them to see the vision that overseas, internationally, where R&B music is prevalent. And in the UK, in Germany, in Japan, it's still called soul music. It wasn't even R&B, it was soul. And I said, so I need to get my product there, but I don't need to reinvent the wheel to do it. And you guys already have, I said, and the major labels already have those doors open. So I need them to see my vision. So he said, okay. He says, I'm pretty familiar with her music. I think I may have heard it. And so I said, okay. And I said, well, what do you do? And mind you, this is like 2 hours into this flight. And it was an overnight flight. And I said, so what do you do? And he says, well, I'm the vice president of business affairs for Sony Red Distribution. I said, what?
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
So we're sitting there talking, and the gentleman is Tony Timpano, great gentleman. And
wow.
We start talking, and we're talking and talking and talking. He says, well, hey, you know, I think I can help you. Well, why don't you come by the office tomorrow? And it was like, okay. So mind you, I'm thinking that he's being nice because I kind of have a captive audience. He can't go anywhere. But we kept talking until the plane landed. And he says, hey, I'll see you later today. And I said, yeah, all right. Well, I lived in Manhattan, so I wasn't far from the Sony building anyway. But, you know, I just said, all right, yeah, whatever. You know, I kind of got to the house, and I was like sitting there going, was he serious? Or am I just...
It serendipitous, and it was what you were looking for at the time. I mean, did you not have his address or?
Oh no, Sony. I had everything. Sony. So yeah, so I was just like, okay, well, and so I'm sitting there, and I'm supposed to meet him at 10 o'clock. Mind you, we landed at 5:30 in the morning. So at 10 o'clock, I'm sitting outside of my apartment, and I'm looking. And I'm like, I wonder if he was serious. I started having my doubts. Like, was he serious? Or am I going to get there? And if we're going to have like 10 days, 20 days, 10 months of conversation about an idea. Well, at 5 minutes after 10, I get a call from him and just, hey, are you almost here? You know, I'm ready for you. I was like, yeah. I'm like 15 minutes away, which I was. And I said, I'll be right there. And I went down, and by the time I got there, he had all the paperwork ready, everything. And it was like, it started my association with Sony.
And this is huge.
And it was great. But again, it's like right place, right time. But more importantly, I think what helped was that I was prepared and I had a plan. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew what I needed. And I needed to find someone who had what I needed. And it goes back to value. Where's the value, and who has what you want? So I went to the people that had what I wanted, and I hadn't even thought of Red, which was a subsidiary of Sony, but they're huge. And I was like, I hadn't even thought of them. But here it was, and it was kind of like sat in my lap.
It's like, literally. You know, preparation. Oh, there you are. Sorry to cut you off, Chemo. can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
It sounds like, you know, it sounds like preparation and opportunity. You know, when they meet each other, that's when things really move. And for a lot of people who are listening that are looking to get into the music business, or maybe just do tracks, lay some tracks down in other areas, this is a really good message. And I wanted to kind of ask you, you know, with the streaming services and the platforms these days, you know, like the Soundstripes, where people can, you know, get music and license it. What do you recommend for people who are trying to jump into those spaces? I know for
I think I lost you. Hello? Hello.
Or my sizzle reel. What do you? Oh, okay. Hello. We're having technical difficulties, but that's okay. Okay. Did you hear any of that question?
I heard the first part, and then it went blank. Okay. Okay. You said like Soundstripe and things like that, and then it kind of went blank.
Oh yeah. So for the people that are listening that are trying to get into that space of producing music that, you know, producers like me can license for projects. What do you recommend for someone that's just trying to get, you know, get started?
Well, the first thing I recommend is, you know, use your warm market, but more than just your warm market of people that know you, sometimes they're not the best barometer if your stuff is ready for prime time, so to speak. So you want to make sure you get the opinion. Yes, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
You kind of want to make sure that your music is ready and that you're ready for what it entails. So you want to get the opinion of people whose opinion you trust, but more importantly, they're not going to obtain it by, that's my friend, and I want to tell them, I don't want to discourage them. So you end up inadvertently telling them what they want to hear, but not what they need to hear. But once you get past that, then it's, you know, if you're trying to place music, say, in commercials or film trailers, things like that, there's a number of ways to do that. I mean, one of the best ways is word of mouth, you know, or just person-to-person contact. You go to these events and different things where these people are and get to meet them and build a relationship with them. Don't come to them and just push your music at them, because hundreds of people are pushing their music at them, but no one's trying to build a relationship with them. So build a relationship. Let them get to know you as a person. But beyond that, then get them to understand that you do great music. You do good music that can apply to what they're doing. Know who you're marketing to and what they do. Just to blindly send things out to people, waste of energy. It's going to get deleted. They're not even going to look at the email because they don't know you. So get to know them. And there's libraries. You know, there's music libraries. You could sign up with those. And there's various different ones that, you know, they'll take your stuff and it'll sit on their servers. And you know, music supervisors, directors, producers can go to these libraries and they can type in the mood, the sound, the speed, what they're looking for. And there's your song. It pops up and they can listen to all these things. And they'll listen to them. And if they like it and they choose it and it gets put into a movie, then you start getting little placements like that. It could be a commercial for something. It could be anything.
Okay.
But
it's really good.
You want to get your foot in the door. Anyway, don't limit yourself by what you want. Look at what's available to you. Because I can have one solitary idea and I can shun 90% of the possibilities because I'm stuck on 10%. Use a shotgun, throw a wide net out there and say, hey, I want my music anywhere people are going to appreciate it. Because at the end of the day, that's what you want.
It sounds like when you find, you target what the need is or the want is by the person that you're pitching, and build the relationship and build, give out some quality there, your needs will be met. What you're looking to do, in the long term will happen. And at this moment, real quick, we've got about 9 minutes left in the show. I would love for you to just go ahead and give our listeners your handles on social media and where they can find you, your websites, everything.
Okay. Website is www.audioblueprint.com. Instagram is Audio Blueprint. Facebook, Audio Blueprint. And if you're looking for me on either one, I have a personal page on both of those of K Kaulani. It's KKAULANI on Facebook. It's Kimo Kaulani on Instagram and on Twitter. And I forgot to say Audio Blueprint at Audio Blueprint for Twitter as well. But if you want to hear some
Kimo,
really good music,
I guess,
yes.
Oh, sorry about that. My feedback is really bad today, listeners. I don't mean to keep cutting them off. But let's just pivot a little bit to music therapy. You know, at this moment in time, how important is that music therapy? I mean, you can't think of a better thing right now.
Right now, I think that music is always a therapeutic thing because as a musician, as a producer, we have the ability to say things that people feel and think but don't know how to express it. So if you're happy, you listen to a happy song. If you're sad, you listen to a sad song. Or maybe the opposite. You're happy, you listen to a happy song, but when you're sad, you might want something to uplift your spirit. And so you listen to a song that talks about those hardships you're going through, but at the end, there's a happy resolve. You can take people on a journey. It's like a roller coaster ride. You can go up the ups and downs, but at the end, you get to get off of that ride. And you get to, and to me, it's like for 3 minutes, I get to take you on a journey that changes your perspective about your own life. So that if you're having a fight with your wife, your husband, or whoever, and you listen to a song that talks about, yeah, we had this fight, I'm sorry, but let's make it. Right, and let's do something better. It might make you just turn the record off and go and talk to your loved one and say, hey, you know what? I'm sorry. Let's start over. It can be any number of things, but you have to think about what your listeners are going through when you're making the music. and what you've gone through, because you don't want to write about something you've never experienced, because it's going to come off contrived or not sincere. And that's why a lot of artists, you really gravitate to them, like a Luther Vandross. When he sang, you felt him.
Yes.
And even further back, if you listen to the Beatles, you listen to their songs, and they're iconic. And you listen to them. Michael Jackson, yep. When he yep. sang, you even Prince, Earth, Wind, and Fire. These songs, you know, and it could be anyone. It was The Who. It was Led Zeppelin. All of these groups, what made them stay around so long was that when people heard their music, they could find themselves in it. They could relate to the experience. Yeah. And they saw that no matter what they were going through, it was going to be okay. And that's the most important thing.
Absolutely. And I love those examples that you provided. It is the universal language. And these days, you know, with everything that's happening, I don't know if you've been keeping up, but I've been finding that Will Smith did some amazing I think it's like called Low Key. He did some amazing mm-hmm. quarantine. And, you know, he put some tracks out. And we also had DJ D Nice making history on the quarantine.
I watched his first one. I've been keeping up with him as well as Will Smith and what he's doing. And it's really cool because, you know, they have the audience and they're saying things that people need to hear, even like Diddy. And, you know, Diddy has done the same thing. Timbaland, Swizz Beatz, they've put together things like these competitions, and they're not even competitions. It's mainly, to me, it's more the highlights. They're bringing together hit song producers and hit songwriters, and basically they're each playing their top 20 big hits, and it's kind of going back and forth. But it's entertaining, and it lets you understand the history of the culture of music, and it lets you understand that you can't move forward unless you know where things came from.
That's right.
And there's a lot of young musicians, artists out there who don't know who a lot of these people are that inspired us. It's our job to kind of inspire them and educate them at the same time and let them hear that, hey, this came from here, this came from there. And one of the good things that I'm seeing is that they're actually bringing out, you know, movies that touch on these things. And that's a very important thing, you know. I think that one last thing I wanted to touch on was related to what you asked me about how to get into this. And it's like, you know, it reminds me of a marketing professor in college. He said, if you can't give it away, you can't sell it. And that's why you see these big companies doing test marketing. Well, you have to do the same thing with your music. Give it. If you see, like, I got into doing little films and stuff because I just had the opportunity to write some music for an independent film. And I said, sure, why not? And I didn't charge him anything. I just did it for the experience. But the music went on to get, it was like the film was garbage. I'll tell you that right now. It ended up being like maybe at a scale of 1 to 10, a 3. But the review on it, the review gave it a 3, but they gave the music a 9. And it was like, it doesn't matter what the film was. It was like, I still gave it the same attention as if it was a blockbuster. It didn't matter to me because my name was on it. So I still had to give it my all. And if you do that, you'll get through a lot of doors because people will see that you're easy to work with. They'll see that you're amenable to whatever the budget constraints may be. And especially with independent film, you know, what I found is a lot of independent directors are more interested in their art, which is the cinematography, the story, and so on and so forth. And the last thing they think about is music. And then they don't even think about things like ADR. They don't think about Foley work. They don't think about any of that stuff. I don't think about, you know, you see somebody walking in high heels on a sidewalk and there's no sound. That's not realistic. You know, a car goes by and there's no sound. You know,
So many amazing points, and we're going to have to follow you on Instagram and reach out to you social media wise. You guys can find Team on the gram and continue this conversation. What do you think?
Anytime. I mean, if anybody wants to reach out to me, I make sure that I respond to everyone who reaches out to me. If you reach out to me and I don't know who you are, I may ask who you are. Did I meet you somewhere? But
we look forward to that. And I'm sorry to cut you off. I'm running out of time. Thank you again for being here. And I want to also give a shout out to my sponsors, Regan Medical, all right, in Costa Mesa. They're putting together an actual medical kit that you guys can have shipped to your house, skincare on the fly, and during the quarantine. So check out Regan First Medical on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Also, Michael Solberg Family Wines. You know I love drinking Michael Solberg Family Wines during the quarantine. You can find them at michaelsolbergwines.com, familywines.com. Also want to say thank you to Robert Cook, to his auto shop there. He's amazing. You can find him on Facebook and Twitter as well as Instagram. And last but not least is Control Alt Gin. If you're looking to restart your life, try something new, Jennifer McCray, she's on Facebook, Control Alt Gin. It's just like Control Alt Delete on Instagram. She's a registered nurse and she's helping people restart their lives and start new journeys. So maximize your time in the quarantine. Good luck with the SBA loans. I know that we had Christina Biddle last week, and we'll have her again next week to check in on the money. And until then, what will you start up? And we'll talk to you soon.
All right.
You're listening to The Startup with Monique LeRae, only on LA Talk Radio.